Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the AI and Beyond for Business podcast. Get ready for an insightful journey into the world of social-emotional learning and how technology can amplify its impact. Today, we're joined by JD Duadebe, the engineering director at Aperture Education, a social enterprise dedicated to developing student strengths through resilience. There are three things to watch out for in this episode. Firstly, JD talks about how she takes a people-focused approach to her engineering team. Secondly, we talk about Aperture's resilience assessment tool, the DESA system, and its incredible outcomes in schools and districts. Lastly, we talk about how technology and artificial intelligence are shaping the future for Aperture and education. I hope you enjoy this conversation. Let's dive in. So just to start off, JD, I want you to talk a bit about your title. So I saw that you have people-focused engineering director as your title. I want you to kind of just dive into that.
Well, thanks for having me here today. I'm excited to be part of the conversation. And I love that you called this out because it's one of my favorite parts of what I do. So the people-focused part of my role is the fact that people matter. As engineers, we are a machine, we are in a production line, we're not just cogs working, but it's people that are actually doing the work and doing the job. And so what it means for me is that I believe the best use of my time is to ensure that the people I work with are thriving and that they're set up for success to work well individually and on a team. That means being challenged, having a collaborative environment where they get to have a voice, and when they use that voice, it's heard and responded to. And I think what that does is it allows us to have the best setup for individuals, for a team, which then produces a great output for the company. And so by putting people first, I'm still building a really good output for the companies I work with, but it leverages the individuals as who they are personally and really sets them up for success at this company, but also for long-term growth.
We're going to talk a lot more about how you guys are leveraging technology, even AI, in kind of achieving that goal of developing more resilient students, educators, and eventually, you know, communities. Before that, I want to introduce my co-host for today's episode. I have with me Courtney Bledsoe, who is from the customer success team at Zasmic, and she's worked for as long as we know with Aperture Education. So I'm going to let Courtney kind of take the lead on this and talk a bit about her experience working with Aperture Education and JD and share some of the highlights from this journey.
Thanks, Aram. So lovely to join today. And I really enjoy working with JD and her team at Aperture Education. I actually have been working with this group for almost 3 years now. Aperture Education came to us through the Google Cloud credits program, and we were really happy to see their explosion and success because of the credit program offered by Google Cloud. They were founded before 2020, and I really want to highlight how during COVID, Aperture Education was a key component to a lot of students across the nation, and they were getting requests even from, you know, government education programs to the schools as well, because of the requests that students needed during such a pivotal time in children's lives during COVID. It's been great to see the success and growth of Aperture Ed over the years. And I just really appreciate working with JD and making sure that they are finding success on Google Cloud. My role with them is a customer success manager, and JD can come to me with any questions. I work directly with Google as well. And so she can come to me with any questions, whether it be a service engagement they may need, questions about the services they're using on Google Cloud. But I really love this company. I love working with JD. And I also want to highlight that this company also was women-led. And so it was founded by women. And I think that's a really important highlight that, you know, when we come together as women, that we can create beautiful and wonderful things that help our nation and our community and the children that need so much help in this social emotional learning space. As part of my job, I would say that we were really able to get Aperture Education immersed into Google Cloud because of an enterprise agreement that we put together before JD took on this role with her predecessor. And it's called a subscription agreement. And it was in the education sector. And really, we were able to have them, their growth and their usage on Google Cloud because of this agreement. And I wish that Google still had this agreement in place, and it's no longer available, but I still enjoy working with this group as a startup and just continuing to see their growth on the cloud. Aperture Education really had amazing growth to use of committed use discounts that Google Cloud offers. JD took advantage of that. After the subscription agreement ended, we found ways for their compute spend to be decreased because of the great incentive that Google offers with committed use discounts. And she can talk more about that in a little bit. I think, JD, do you have any insights about working with a partner and using us on, you know, as a partner with Google Cloud? Do you have any insights there and how you have appreciated the partnership?
Yeah, no, great question. This was a new space for me. So I hadn't worked with Google Cloud for a few companies from a platform standpoint. But then coming here, I've never worked with a partner with Google Cloud in the past. And so this was the first learning for me on Zasmic and what the integration was and how that was working. And I, like you mentioned, my predecessor, and she raved about this relationship and this connection and was really helpful to be able to help transition that from her to myself as we were making that transition. And to call on a couple of the details here is it just allows me to be really comfortable with, I don't know what this is, but I have a group of people that let me help answer those questions really quickly. And so we can come together, we can brainstorm together, we can answer the different things, because every platform always has its unique parts to it. And it's different things that you have to, you know this little detail or know that little detail. And I don't retain all of that information in my head, nor do I want to. And so it's really nice to be able to have other people that maybe know the specifics or know the details, or even know things to pay attention to. Like you mentioned earlier, when we were transitioning from one financial standing with Google, it was kind of going away. We were going to move to something else. There was a big partnership here when we were saying, what are our options? Can we use the committed use discounts? What's that going to do for us? And like, I even got motivated and even kind of driven through like what's the right steps to take to make sure that we're set up for success with using Zasmic. And so I think it was a really nice integration and a really nice partnership. And it doesn't happen on an ongoing basis. It's not needed ongoing, but it's there whenever needed. And then there's always this check-in as well that's provided so that we're staying on top of the different things that we're actively using.
Yes, I love that, the fact that I'm kind of just here in the background, right? Like, and if anything does come up or if there's an alert or anything like that, you can come to us at any time. And we do work, you know, hand in hand with Google. So you just have a larger account team basically behind you, backing you and making sure that you do feel supported. So I do appreciate that as well. What has your journey been like, you know, using Google Cloud? I know that you have, you know, used different cloud platforms in the past, and your use of, you know, Google Cloud and Compute Engine and other services and products that you use. There's a benefit, right, of those committed use discounts. And I was curious, what's your take on how Google handles that?
Yeah, I appreciate the question. I've enjoyed getting to know the Google Cloud platform a lot more and its different aspects. There's bittersweet moments in that nature where some things I'm learning as I'm going and other things I value right away of how they're set up and what's working for them. Last year, we were on the subscription agreement, which allowed us to have really awesome benefits for being in the education field. It was a huge benefit that Google provided and the company really leveraged that. And when that was transitioning to no longer being available for us, it really made us really look down and say, okay, where are we at financially? This is going to have impact. What impact is it going to have? And what can we set ourselves up for success going forward? And so Zasmic was actually someone that really helped me say, okay, let's look at what our options are and say, hey, maybe you actually should consider this committed use discounts, and kind of helped guide me towards that direction, which was the right direction for us at the time. So it ended up being a space where we were able to make 3-year commitments because our traffic is really consistent. We vary in the nature of our school year. We get really busy seasons. You know, we have busy times of day, but the overall traffic throughout the whole year is pretty consistent. And we have years of data to know how consistent it is. And so being able to say, hey, yeah, let's commit to that for 3 years. We know we're at this level. We're hoping from here, we just want to be able to grow. And so if anything, we want to be able to have more committed use discounts going forward. We're able to really look at that from that 3-year standpoint. And I actually wasn't paying. I knew we set it up. We were successful. I was looking at it month to month, which is awesome. But then Courtney came back to me and she's like, did you know how much you're saving right now? And I hadn't looked at it from that angle until she came back and said that. And it turns out that we're saving 57% of our cloud SQL costs by using Google Cloud, by using these discounts. And it's huge. That's a huge number. And so we're saving significant for our company by making that commitment with Google to say, hey, yeah, we're sticking with you. We're working with you. You're a great platform. You're working really well for us. And here's our usage. We know our usage is going to be here or growing. And so let's commit to that. And so we have been able to be a benefit of that every month, month on month. We're benefiting from that right now. And we'll look forward to doing more so as we get closer to that 3-year mark, or as we continue to grow and want to add more committed use discounts to keep that discount as low as we can.
Yeah, you're one of my prime examples when I talk to other customers about the benefit of using committed use discounts. So you're my number one.
This is really useful for us. So I'm glad it is, because those numbers are much nicer when I add that 57% discount than before. So the company's definitely leveraging that benefit. Thank you, Google.
Yeah, fantastic. Thanks.
Now, JD, I want to talk about you're joining with Aperture. So you've been here over a year, and just when you got that opportunity to join, what was it about Aperture that really kind of ticked for you?
Yeah, thank you for thinking about that. I enjoyed getting to know Aperture through the interview process, but really what drew me in was the product. So being able to work on social and emotional learning and resilience for students, it's an area where I didn't have that depth of emotional learning as a kid. I grew up in an environment where if you were either happy or you're sad. And if you're sad, you should be happy. And that was like the extent of the emotional language in my household. And that was okay. That's what I was given. That's what I worked from. And I was still able to be successful. But my 20s, I spent a lot of my 20s actually, expanding my own emotional intelligence to realize that there's more emotions than two, and it's okay to have them. They don't have to have a judgment behind them. So it was a really big push for my own self-awareness and building my own resilience. And so when I found a company that wanted to help provide that awareness and that education for kids at different ages so that they could have that earlier in their life, because as soon as you have built out resilience, you get that for life. You don't just get it for now, right? Like that's like a skill set that like hangs out with you and is there through the hard times and the good times, right? So knowing that this was a company that really helped focus on a mission that I could get behind and that I could be supportive and help these individuals, both teachers and students, be able to have this information to help leverage their own growth, knowing that growth is more than just academics, that there's so much growth to an individual as they're going through those, school age years, even beyond. And so I really loved being able to connect to that mission and now be able to bring my skill set of engineering and my skill set of working with people to this company to help continue that mission forward.
It's funny that you say that about, like when we grew up, correct? Right? Like that's what it was. And I've just seen that through my own kids too, being able to pinpoint, okay, this is how I'm also maturing, right? In my emotions.
Yes. Yes.
So.
And it's a constant learning space, right? Like we don't ever kind of stop growing and stop learning. Mm. It's just where we're at in that journey. And this just adds something to the kid's journey at a different time than maybe I got it. And you could talk to people all across Aperture, and we all have some story as to how do we connect to the mission. And a lot of people have it because their kids are in schools and they get to see that benefit right away. Some of us have my stories like mine where they didn't get the skill till later. And so they're excited to be able to help bring it forward. But all of us have some version of how do we connect to this mission. And it's really interesting because I have a technology background, not an education background. I'm used to working at companies that are very male focused and male heavy in the nature of how many quantities of people there are there. And so, you called out Courtney earlier that this is a female led company. When I came to this company, it was very surprising how many women worked at this company. It's drastically different from the last several companies I had worked at, because not only are there female founders, female executives, but it's also found in all of the other departments as well. And part of that is the nature of the mission. It is children focused, and it is, has this mission that a lot of women can get behind. Not that the men can't get behind it as well, but that it was a change for me to come into an organization that was more women than men. And it was noticeable in so many different meetings and situations where I'm used to being the only female. That shifted on me, where there was maybe one or two males when there was a group of women in the room. And so it was a very nice transition to see as well, which is a unique part of working at this company.
I love that factor. Thank you again for highlighting that.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm sure everybody who's worked on the product definitely has that sort of attachment to the vision. But even as someone who just found out about the company, you know, a month or so ago, just going through the kind of work you guys are doing, the outcomes the product is kind of looking to achieve, I think it kind of pulled on a few strings within my heart as well when it came to my own education. I think it's something that's connected. So like connected to everyone's life. So the stakeholders in this aren't just the people working on it, or even just the students who are part of it. It's the teachers. It's also the parents of the and the families of these people. So it's. I mean, I would say there's no one who is not affected by you know, a product like this. It's like one of those. It spreads across the globe. You know, it's boundless. Let's put it that
way. Yeah, I would say that like this is one of my accounts that I keep a close eye on, just because I have a personal interest in like how I want this to be so successful. So just because I think, you know, we all come from a place of making sure that children are heard and, you know, and that their emotions and their needs are being met. So I have a couple, like five companies that I just like want to make sure that I keep an eye on and making sure that their growth is continued.
Wow, fantastic. So before we move on to a bit on the technical side of this conversation, I want you to, for the listeners, just roughly talk about what the DESA system is and what you guys are doing.
Yeah, no, I love to be able to talk about the product itself. So the DESA is an assessment, but it's focusing on social and emotional learning. So what it does is it assesses for resilience, really, is what it's looking for across six different competencies. So we look for optimistic thinking, we look for self-management, relationship skills, social awareness, self-awareness, and responsible decision-making. And we look across all of those competencies, and we were able to give a competency score for each one of those, as well as an overall score for what is their overall resilience. And we do this in a couple of different ways. So we have middle school students and high school students who are able to do a self-assessment. So they can fill out the assessment themselves and get data right away. We tell them what their strengths are. They're able to set challenges to say, yeah, I want to continue growing my strengths. I want to get better at my strengths. Mm-hmm. As well as we tell them the areas that maybe they're not as strong in, and maybe they want to focus on those ones instead. And so they get the information to be a little bit more self-led. They're at that age where they can be, and they can build those skills a little bit more on their own. Especially since they're in environments where they don't have one teacher anymore. They have multiple teachers that are focusing on different aspects. This gives them the controls to kind of manage this and move this forward on their own without having to be driven by the teacher as much. The other side of this is we also provide this for the teachers. Now, you think about like an elementary school teacher. They usually have a class of 30 or so students, and those kids can't do a self-assessment. And so the teacher comes in, and we want to provide them a really successful environment for them to fill out this assessment for all of their students at one time. So we want to make that quick and easy for them, but also be able to give them that data so that they get a look at it afterwards, and they get to have the data that's individual for each student, but they also get to have the whole classroom as well. So after they take the assessment, they get the data to be able to see how the class as a whole is doing, and maybe they have strengths in certain competencies, and maybe as a classroom, they're low in a particular competency. So they might notice that they're low in self-awareness for the whole classroom, and we provide them strategies that they can use right there to integrate into their everyday teaching to help leverage the entire class to gain that skill and improve that skill and practice that skill. And so they can do that for a whole classroom. They can do that for an individual student. We also have that same data set up so that the school as a whole could look across how's the whole school doing. We have it set up for the district. They could look across how the whole district is doing. That way, if there's something that's missing at a whole school, they could work on something different. If there's something missing at a whole district, they can work on that. And then we really break it down to say, sometimes without a classroom, sometimes it's just the individuals, and say, hey, this individual for whatever reason, need some help and support in this area. And then they can really focus it on smaller groups as well to help really build out and develop that skill. And the DESA, the whole thing is really focused on strengths. We're really backed by that strength-based side of things, so that when we're speaking to students and we're speaking to the individuals, we really continue to focus on their strengths and build themselves up versus tear them down by using the system as well.
I love the fact that it could be just automatic, right? Like, you're right there, you get that assessment pretty rapidly. Is that correct?
Yeah, you get the results right away. Yeah. So as a student, they get it right after. As a teacher, you can get the results right after, but usually they do the whole class and then look at the results as a whole, just so that they can continue to go through the process. But they do get the results right after, at like a high level set.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and you guys have been doing this for a while now. So could you just talk very kind of briefly about the kind of outcomes you've seen in districts and schools? What has been the outcome of using the DESA system?
The DESA has been around for a long time. And and we've recently just renormed it so that it's got post-pandemic updates. Mm-hmm. And we've kind of renormed it for the world we live in today has shifted a little bit since COVID. And so we've been able to set that up, which has been really nice. But to speak to some of the things that we've noticed, right? So it's interesting because we'll work with different schools at different times. So we had, COVID was a really big push for us to work with more schools because they had a focus within the school set to kind of lean into the product itself and realize that there's more than just academics for a student and kind of leveraging that. But what we do is we provide historical data to all of these districts. So some of the schools were with us for years. So think about a student that comes in and they maybe start in second grade and they work with this district as they go through this whole school year. They get that information in second grade and third grade and fourth grade and fifth grade. And so they can see their own growth and development throughout their school development as well. So the teachers get that information historically of like where the student was and where they're going. And it allows districts to really say, let's make a big shift. Let's make a big change, but let's know what we're shifting and let's be able to measure it. So sometimes you might have an initiative that you want to do, but is it the right initiative? And are we actually making a change on that initiative? And our system helps provide that data to say, yeah, you are. You are looking at the right thing because here's the results of the study that says, yes, that's the area that's best for your school. And then you can remeasure that. You can remeasure that in a few months and see change. So we have PhD individuals in our company who do scientific research that verifies the DESA itself, but also verifies the studies that come from that. And we've proven that you can make an impact on an individual's resilience in just a few months. And okay. So from a school's point of view, right, they could test in say September or October, that's our busy season. They could test right then and get some data and realize, oh, we're a little lacking in a particular area here that we want to be better. We want to be stronger in this area. They could really set an initiative out. And in March, they could reassess and realize that they have made a shift and a change for so many students across the entire site.
Incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. Incredible. I mean, I wish I had DESA at my time, but anyway.
Don't we all?
Joining the company and even people that I interview and I hire, they're like, can I take the test? Can I take the assessment? And I absolutely did. I absolutely came in and I was like, let me just fill this out I'm just testing, right? I'm just going to fill it out for myself. And it's really interesting to get that information, right? Sometimes it matches your self-awareness that you already have, but it breaks it down into categories that I don't always think about those competencies. So it's really fun, even as an adult, even though the assessment's really set up for kids, I can still take it as an adult and get valuable information. And so I love it when a new individual joins and they're like, can I take it? I'm like, yes, please take it, learn, continue your own development.
I was just thinking that. I was like, I wonder if they'll let me take it.
we can talk about that, Courtney. Okay. We can talk about that.
It's interesting how when we're working within organizations, these are traits which are highly valued, but it's not something, and not just for those organizations, but generally in the success of any individual. But surprisingly, those aren't kind of cultivated and nurtured from an early age and monitored, more importantly. Any sort of changes has to be preceded by the awareness of what's needed. So, it's surprising this hasn't been out there. I mean, you guys look like you want to say something, so I'll let you go.
I think it's really interesting because the language that is used in education changes and varies. And I've talked to an educator last year, and she's like, this was what we were talking about 20 years ago. This is what we were talking about 30 years ago, but this is the word you used, right? And so the knowledge of this particular area has been around, right? The fact of, we think about like a whole child or beyond academics, we really need a variety of skill sets to be successful in the world that we're in. And schools are aware of that. Teachers are aware of that. But it's kind of gone through cycles of what becomes the focus at that time. And that's due to the environments around us, as well as the language that's being used at that time, as well as things like, I'm using the language social emotional learning, I'm using the language resilience, but you might go to a high school and they might use the language college and career readiness. Oh. Right. And we have the conversation to say, well, tell me what that means for your students. And they list out what they think it means to be college and career ready. And I list out what it means to be resilient. And the overlap is significant. Mm-hmm. And so it's amazing how much you have to kind of find the fit for the schools using the language that's now or the language that's for the state or the district. Because every state has different policies and different things. Mm-hmm. And so it's really figuring out what's the right communication to know that we're talking about the same thing, because the value, you're right, that this is something that educators know about, this is something that is needed and is useful across everyone, but it's finding the commonality in our language so that we know what value we're providing and matches what value people are looking for as well.
Yeah, I mean, fantastic. I did take a look at the 72 questions and went through all of them. So I'll link it down for anyone else who's listening and wants to take it for themselves.
Good news, our post norms brought that down to 55 questions. So don't worry, we're getting a little bit faster, a little bit shorter, but it goes really fast. So even though it's 55 questions, it usually takes about 5 to 7 minutes to complete, because it's just a quick question and same answers every time. So it's a fast test, even though there's lots of questions.
Very fun.
Yeah, good call out. Now, you guys, again, you mentioned you work with over like millions of students and you know, several districts. It's something which you've almost made like a seamless network, that even if a child is moving from one district or school to the other, there is a record that is available. So it's a continued system where the child's almost being looked after by everyone. So having such large data sets, how do you guys kind of work with that sort of data, and what sort of technologies are really involved in handling them?
It's a great question. It's a question most large companies run up against, and we're not as large as many. So we don't have to be as crazy as some larger companies that are out there. But some of the things that we look about, so we really care about making sure that our data is safe and secure. We really look at making sure that it's set up so that it can be timely as well. We want to make sure that the students and the teachers don't have to sit and wait for getting answers and information and getting the results. We want that to be really smooth for them. So what we've done with our database is we've partitioned it. So we've broken it down into chunks that allows us to really focus on the particular district or the particular school one at a time. Instead of having to search through all the data, we really can just go into that particular partition and just search through that partition. So it limits our searches. Outside of that, we've also optimized all of our queries to make sure that we're hitting the standards that we want to be able to make sure is successful for these schools and these districts. So we've got performance tests that we run on a regular basis. So we run those on our new queries. We add those to them to make sure we're up at the right standard. And then we maintain those so that if something shifts, if our data increases, and then now our performance tests are failing, we can go in there and look at that right away before it becomes a slowdown for any of our clients. We're going to kind of get that awareness ahead of time so that we can adjust the needed queries or the database set up for that success for that school.
Yeah, and can you talk a bit about how the schools kind of receive this data? How do they, how in what way are they using it? Is this primarily for you know, the teachers? Can school administrations also take decisions on the basis of this?
But the data as a whole, so we'll start from the beginning. We need the ability to know the school, the teachers, the students, to be able to be successful, to connect student to teacher, to connect who's going to be helping take the assessment, who's going to see the data. So there's a whole setup that happens initially for us to be able to be successful for allowing the data to be transparent to the right level, but not beyond. So if I'm a third grade teacher, I get the results from my class, but I might not get the results for the entire third grade because I don't teach the whole third grade. So we have a little bit of setup that goes on that says, hey, who's allowed to see who? What's this data look like? And then, of course, we've got administrators, we call them program admins, that are able, or site leaders even, that are able to see maybe the whole school or the whole district to really make sure that things are set up correctly, making sure that we're not missing any student that doesn't get an assessment so that they actually get that data and we get to have that awareness around them as well. And then making sure they get a look at the data. So the data is returned to at every level. So if the student takes a self-assessment, they get data for themselves. If a teacher takes assessments, they get data for one student or however many students they take the assessment for. So there's data given right away after the test. And that data looks like a few different things. So the data is an overall score. The data and that score is broken down into three categories. It's broken down into a needs improvement, meets, or strengths. And so it's kind of really saying, like, here's your overall score, but like, where does it fit in like this general sense of categorization? And then we also break it down into those competencies, so the individual competencies. So maybe, you know, I took the test and my teacher's like, oh, JD, you know, you came in pretty low. You came in for the need for improvement section. What's going on? So she could go look at myself and say, oh, JD, I see what competencies that you're lacking in right now. Let's see what we can do to really help you out. How can we help build those strengths to be stronger for you? And so they can really dive into that individual level. But we also have the data set up so that the site can do that. The site leader or the program admin can look at it at that level too. So maybe for the entire school, maybe this one high school, they want to look at the whole school and see where the school's at. And it's like, oh, we can cheer at this strength. This school's doing really, really good with optimistic thinking. So they have that data right away so they can celebrate and cheer within their school itself. But they also have the data where they say, what do we want to work on? Right? And they can break it down into a variety of things. They can break it down by teacher. They can break it down by grade. They can break it down by class. So we allow them to let them filter the data so that they can see it in so many different ways. Because schools are also working and implementing other things. They've got lots of things on their plate. And so it's how are they going to connect this data to the programs that they're already initiating and doing right then too. So they might be looking at something that's grade-based. And so they might want to filter by grade, where another school might be focusing on something that's a little bit different. And so they want to filter their data slightly differently and be able to pull out insights that meet their other focuses that are going on. And we want to give them that flexibility because schools have different needs, have different programs set up already that we want to be able to just sneak in and be able to, let's just make those better. Let's just make those programs better by adding a few strategies here and there and meet the needs that you're already at and you're already working with. So if we look at this from a technology standpoint, to give you a little bit of lens of what we look like technically through that whole process, right? So we have an SFTP site set up to allow us to bring data in and do some of this rostering data. If you think about the nature of us, we don't have that data from student to teacher to classroom and all of that data. We've got a rostering set up so that we can get the data on an ongoing basis through an SFTP integration that allows the schools to continually push the data. So when a brand new student joins, they're integrated right into our system and things like that. We also have it be self-managed as well. Not every school is going to want to do that level. So we have the ability for self-management and where they can upload those files right into our web application as well. We have two web applications that we really kind of maintain for our customers. We've got a student-focused one and a teacher-focused one. The teacher-focused one is the teachers and the administrators. It's all of the data and the reports and their strategies all fall within that same category. Both of them are web-based and both of them are built off of Node.js. We use TypeScript and React as some of our main technologies there. We use Firebase as one of our main authenticators. And then we use Postgres SQL as our main database that we use for all of the data that we maintain. And as I mentioned before, we partition it so that we can easily find that data quickly, because it is a lot of data when it starts talking about schools and their students and multiple assessments per student at different times. But within that, we have lots of data that's moving and lots of data that's coming from schools, that's getting into our system, and that then we're presenting. So we're presenting data that looks like a visual chart. It has a table of data as well, and the ability for them to say, oh, I want to download this and even manipulate it a little bit more or integrate it into my academic program. So they could download it and they could upload it into their academic system as well. So there's a variety of ways in which the data is presented, a variety of ways in which they can access the data and pull it out. But all of this data is also really critical in the nature that it's schools' data, it's students' data. We all really care about data being successful, data being secure for our kiddos, right? So all of this is done in a secure fashion. We talk about data encrypted at rest, data encrypted in motion. We make sure that we have, you know, a good algorithm set up so that when you're logging in, we've got a high standard of who can access the system, that it's hard to kind of break in. We're monitoring and making sure that if there's any attacks or attempts that are coming in, we're aware of that right away, and things that we can adjust and help support before it becomes an issue, before it becomes anything that's exposed there. But really, we do a lot of things to make sure that we do data access controls. So it's limited who has access to the production data, which is our students' data. All of our testing environments, we've got like a demo environment that we want our clients to be able to see, maybe even interact with. But none of that is our students' data. So we do a lot of setup and data creation that is accurate to the environments that we work in, that's still scattered of information. And we do that in a way that is not customer data, so that we're not showing, exposing, or sharing any of our students' data through our testing platforms, through our demo platforms, or anything like that. We want to be really conscious of who has access to that, limit who has access to that, and then you make sure when we do access the student data, we're doing it in a really secure fashion and making sure only the right roles are interacting with that data, so that we're not oversharing or overexposing any students' results.
I have a quick question. I was curious about when you do onboard, a district or a school, like, do you have an onboarding process with them, like in teaching them how to use that so that they can get the best results?
Yeah. So we have two different types of onboarding processes that I'll speak to. One is the onboarding process of let's get you set up in the system. And mm-hmm. that's going to be where we get your student data, where we get your teacher data. We do the rostering aspect and we set you up of how do you want to use our tool within your school? And we set you up that way. And we have an individual that works with the school and the district all along that process to help them set up and be set up for success. Successfully. The other type of integration we do, that's the wrong word for it. The other type of help and support we do during an onboarding process is to be able to support them on learning our tooling. What do we offer? What do we provide? And so we do a lot of professional learning on this area, where it's professional learning for the administrators, professional learning for the teachers. And we have several, I'll call them mini courses, video walkthroughs of what does the system mean? What are you leveraging? What are you getting at? And we do that for the different roles within the system. And they're available day one for these individuals so that, the administrator can get a little bit ahead before they bring the teachers in, and the teachers can have some access and resources that are at their fingertips that they can kind of leverage. But they also usually have someone that's within our school, within our company that they can talk to, email questions back and forth, and say, okay, I'm getting ready for this rollout within the district. And we work with them, and we host the knowledge share and the initial meeting that says, yeah, let me walk you through it. Let me tell you what this is. And so we can kind of be the knowledge experts in that initial rollout. And it varies based off of the size of school and the district and their needs and what they want. Some prefer the more asynchronous version of information, and others prefer the hands-on. And we kind of allow for both. What works best for them, we want to support them in their needs.
That makes sense. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier how, there is some sort of work constantly being done on improving the DESA assessment as well. You certainly made it slightly shorter. You've added a DESA mini to it. I don't know if that's an older thing or it's just something you guys kind of introduced. But I'm just wondering where in the development of this entire program, what is that process like? Who are you essentially talking to and getting this feedback from? And then internally, how do you guys decide where you want to take this assessment? Like, what is essentially the goal for making this better?
Yeah, great question. And I'll speak to the minis just for a minute so everyone has some context around that. So we have the DESA assessment, which we've talked about, maybe 72 questions or 55 questions, but we've come out with a DESA mini, and that's not new. That's before my time. So I can't actually speak to when that came out, but it's been out for a while and we're really grateful for it. So it's a 10 question mini that lets us do a quick check-in, right? Sure. So maybe as a teacher who's doing 30 students, I can do the DESA mini, do quick 10 questions with each student, and then that will highlight students that need to maybe dive in. Let's dive in and take the full assessment for just a few students so that we can really break down what that student might need help in and support in across those competencies. So instead of teachers having to take the larger assessment all the time, there's this easy mini that they can take to get the information and then have a stepping stone into like, okay, let's get more information for certain students. And so we do have that set up. It's really nice to have set up. The more recent thing that I talked about just briefly earlier, I'll mention again, is the fact that we've done post-pandemic norms, yes. Which is really nice to be able to connect our data directly with the current environment we're in, not the environment pre-2020. The environment we're currently in is what we're doing. We've done that for middle school. We're actively in the moment of changing that for high school. We're testing it right now, which is one of the things that we're doing that answers your question here is we do active testing. So as I mentioned, we've got our R&D department is full of individuals with PhDs. Some tech companies, their R&D department is the engineering team.
Right.
We are a little bit different in that nature. We have an engineering team. And don't worry, we also want to push the bounds of making sure we're on top of the new technology and what are we using and are we set up for success. But then we have these PhD individuals who are focusing on scientific research to make sure that we're set up for success as well. And I love this part of our company because not very many companies are that that backed and that proven of what works and what's successful for our students today. So I think it's really useful. And one of the things that we're doing to help with these norms and send it these norms is we've just integrated the ability for us to be able to test right away with our students and get some results right away. So think about it in the nature of this 55 question assessment that a student is taking. We add one, maybe two questions to the end of that question. And then we can look at their research-backed DESA results with these two questions that we added on to the back. And we have data right away to say, are these the right questions? Are they matching the right norms? And we can use our own data set, our own, you know, millions of students in our system today, every school year, to get the data really fast to improve the speed at which we can do these research and continue to stay on top of being research-based for our students and our districts. And so it's a new thing for us to be able to have like the quick, easy access integration where before we were making studies where we had to pull teachers and pull students and as a secondary thing and have them do a second test and a second thing over here. And this has allowed us to make that really seamless, easy, very minimal time for our students and our teachers, but also provide so much valuable data for our research team to be able to use and move and really focus it on different research studies that they want to be able to do at a fast pace and do that. And so that's one of the ways in which we're thrilled about. The R&D team is super excited to take this, the data collection part, which is usually the largest part of their research and make that really simple and smooth for them, but then to also use the results of that and have that integrate back into our roadmap, knowing that we get the results from the R&D team. What does that mean for us? How can we set up, use that information to be successful within the platform? And that's where the engineers really come back in and say, okay, knowing this information, knowing what the customers are asking for, let's combine that into a successful, seamless technology platform for them and for their success.
It's incredible, like how fast that you guys are able to spit that back out. I mean, really is. It's fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, at the core of this is actually, it comes back to the importance of having technology here, because essentially that's what allowed the DESA to kind of scale to millions of students and people all over the, not just the United States, but I'm sure it's gone beyond that border as well.
It's a really good column that you see that because lots of different school-based assessments and school-based programs are paper-based. Mm-hmm. They're scanned, fill in the bubble, put it in the machine, right? And then the pandemic happened and kids went home. How do you get them a scantron, have them fill it out and get it back and put it in the machine, right? And so over the pandemic, lots of systems, even the standardized systems, the tests for our standardized academics ran into this problem of we aren't set up to be remote, right? We're not technically based so that we could say, yeah, you could take it with a paper or you could take it with an application. And so we were ahead of the game on that front. Yes. We are technology first, not paper first. And so that really helped us be able to set up success for all schools. Are you in-house? Are you at home? You can take it from either location. And so we've set up for success for that, where other products and other systems have had to kind of try and make that transition and support getting to that during a pandemic situation, which is really difficult timing wise to do that. And so that was just a win that we were already ahead of the game to stay technical up front.
I'm wondering how Aperture is kind of responding to this surge of AI and generative AI that's coming up, and what are some of the fears, which your team is kind of discussing at this point?
Great question. And you're 100% right. It's easy access to people now. And if you haven't interacted with AI, please, you probably haven't just not known it at some point. Lots of companies. but it's useful for you as well. So like, I'm just going to put a little plug out there, you know, go play around with some of these AI tools that are out there. They can be really useful to leverage in your day-to-day work life to, you know, write me this really quick, like email. I get my quick ugly draft and it makes it pretty. And I'm like, thank you for taking my emotion out of my business email. I needed that today. And so it's useful and it's out there for all of us. And the nice part about that for kids is they're getting it from the get-go. They're getting it from the start of their education. They're going to have access to this, which makes it tricky when you start talking about like plagiarism and how do we now support homework assignments and things like that when we have access to this tool. But it's a tool that we want kids to also use because they're going to leverage that for their life. And if we get them to leverage it early, then they get to have the skill set and the mindset of how to interact with that. And it will help us develop what that looks like over years and years and years to come. So I'm excited about that. But from the company, from our company's perspective, we definitely want to be able to pay attention to this area and this field. And what does that look like? And what does it look like for us? There's some pretty classic AI integrations, which are going to be things like a chat bot, where you start talking to someone and you get information in a very timely fashion, kind of on the website itself. And there's opportunities for us to consider that and look at that. And really, how would we do that differently for a student? How would we do that differently for a teacher? And so we're actively exploring those potential opportunities within our platform. But we want to be able to make sure the scope is limited to the research data that we have. So because we're research-backed, we really want to make sure we leverage that and we don't lose that by integrating an AI platform that doesn't stay within the research that we have. We don't want them to stretch our research into something that's not quite there. So there's some works there and some boundaries that we'd want to set up to make sure that we continue to maintain our value set for our company itself. But there's other areas here too. If we start thinking about machine learning, which is an aspect, a subset, if you want to call it that, of AI, but it's a space where we have data for, we're saying resilience, right? We've got this broken down by competencies, but then there's so much data out there that's academic based. And our company is recently, we'll call it relatively recently, you know, integrated with another company and they have other types of assessments that are out there. So we've got access to even other data that we could, if a district wants us to, we could have even more data to say, let's get this big picture look of a student. Let's have it be a space where you can see your resilience right next to your English score, right next to your you know, all these other different types of assessments that they're doing along their journey of education, and then use that data to leverage what maybe is useful for that school or for that individual, given all of that information. And it's really, once you start looking at all the information, once you start combining a lot of types of data, the information that AI and machine learning could really come up with isn't something that we could do. Because then they want to look at that at the individual level. They want to look at that at the classroom level. And that's what we really leverage machine learning for, is being able to say, dump the data, research the data, go through this data, compare it to all the other data, and what is important for this situation, and then provide that information. And that's something that we're early on. We want to move that direction. The company wants to move that direction. And it's our conversations. It's our thinking. How do we do that? And we're moving down that pathway. Now, hopefully we get there in a timely fashion and that works for the industry when it's out. But the industry is a tricky one when it's technology, right? I think that's a space that probably other companies are also looking at, because it's such a new tool. And it's a tool now that's at our fingertips, that we want to be able to, our company as well as other companies, want to really be able to set themselves up for success in providing as much information to our customers as possible. And so I hope that other companies are also thinking about that and looking at ways in which they can drive that mission and that vision forward. And I think with this particular industry, AI and machine learning is going to be a needed aspect of it here shortly to be able to stay in the races.
JD, it's been a great experience talking to you. I remember you were worried whether we'll be able to fill in the hour, but we're actually at the hour. So, and it's been a pleasure. I absolutely enjoyed this conversation, and I hope everyone listening did too. Thank you so much for your time, for sharing all your insights and everything Apercher is doing. I think it's awesome. It's impacting millions, billions of lives by extension. Thank you so much, Courtney. Thank you for co-hosting with me. Wouldn't have been this good if you weren't here. Thank you everyone for listening. JD, any last words?
I just want to say thanks for letting me part of the conversation. Thanks for letting me speak to things that I have passions around and things that I love as well, and able to speak to the company. I appreciate the opportunity, and I love that you're doing this for your company, and I hope it's successful for all. So thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
That wraps our conversation with JD. What an enlightening discussion. I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I hope you did too. There are a few things which I want to reflect on at the end of this episode, which I took away from it. Firstly, the mission-driven work at Aperture Education. It was inspiring to see how a strong mission focused on social emotional learning drove the entire organization and resonated with all the people that worked there, as well as anyone who was part of the education system. Secondly, Aperture's innovative use of data, especially through the DESA system, really, really showed the potential for technology to personalize education, to make it better for students in terms of impact, and also to support their well-being. And lastly, technology and AI is such a major part of our future going forward. And that's why we have this podcast to begin with. The insights into how Aperture is approaching AI and machine learning while still staying true to its research-backed foundation is great. And it's a great example of how we can stick to our traditions and stick to the core of what every business is doing and integrate AI into it and make it a part of it moving forward. A big thank you to JD for sharing her expertise and her passion with us on this episode. It was thoroughly enjoyable and insightful to talk to her. And thank you to you all for tuning in. Join us next time for more on the AI and Beyond for Business podcast. Thank you.